Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. I am not having a good day.
Oh, May. I know what you're going to say. Oh, my God. Tell everybody.
I have got the worst eye infection. I have got some sort of horrible sty, but not trying to sound too dramatic, I could barely open my eye this morning. The swelling that's gone down into my face was so bad. I even Kit was like, oh God, mummy, what's wrong with your face? And I was like, oh my God, don't look at me. Oh. Don't look at me. What?
You had a lovely weekend though. And this is almost like, why does this happen when you've actually had like a relaxing, lovely time?
I have a theory on this, right? Yeah,
oh, no.
I have a theory that once you stop, because I went to Ibiza, I went to see my best mate. I had 48 hours there. It was absolutely dreamy. But all we did was sit and read our books, chat, you know, go for a nice lunch, go for lovely dog walks. And I finally sort of relaxed and wasn't this sort of frenetic kind of crazy woman. And I think that's I think once you kind of let your barriers down and you're not sort of fighting, you allow stuff in. And I think that's what's happened. My immune system must be absolutely through the floor to get this because it feels like a real infection.
Oh, no, don't. It isn't. It's really not fair. But tell us what you got up to. Let's be positive.
It was so good. Anybody that's been to the island will know how incredible it is. And I'm sure lots of people listening might have been there kind of when they're younger and they've been raving. There'll be still some people that love going now and taking the kids and stuff. Maybe people listening have never been. But the joyous thing about Ibiza is that you can go any time of the year, like the winter on that island is something else. It's really special. So all the tourists have gone. You've got the locals that live there, and there's a big Brit and European contingency there. I know lots of friends that are there, and the hikes and stuff. Like, we did all this really cool kind of, I mean, genuinely, it's the most sort of pure I've ever been on that island. I did sort of wake up on the Friday morning being like, what? why am I not just going to bed now?
Yeah, but it was really great.
Yeah, exactly. I loved it. I feel very lucky to have gone. And I went to see my one of my oldest and bestest mates. So it was really great. How are you? How was your weekend?
Yeah, I'm good. What did we do? Do you know what? Not much, which was perfect. Just went to a friend's house on Saturday to watch the rugby, although I didn't watch it, but you know, everyone else did. And
what were you doing?
Chatting. And then what did we do? Nothing. Just had like a really chilled weekend. I think, taking my own advice, really, I think the next probably, I think, 6 weekends we haven't got a free day. And so I was like, we definitely need to have some time this weekend. So we did. And it was lovely. It was really, really nice. I feel like I've got like butterflies in my stomach all the time about skiing, and you told me you're going to get hold of me. So yeah,
Georgia, you're losing your skiing virginity. It's a big moment for you.
Yeah.
Listen, first of all, you have every right to feel anxious and nervous because it is a big deal. And obviously there's the sort of fear factor that's coming in. Is that what you're worried about? You're worried about injury?
I'm not entirely sure why. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Duh.
Anyway.
I mean, the most wonderful thing is that you're going to have your lessons. So you're going to be in very safe hands. You're not going to be with Judgy James. He's with somebody else. So they know exactly what they're doing. They eat, sleep and breathe it. And the snow is really soft. It's going to be lovely and warm for you. And also, George, if you're not enjoying it that much and you think, I'm too old for this shit,
Yeah.
Go and sit and enjoy the apres.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Okay. Go and be by myself. That is a great idea. Absolutely great idea. I was on this next record. Well, I was on this interview by myself because you were off doing your thing.
Do you know what? I had my first second Alexis Conran show, which was amazing. The show that I've been doing on Channel 5, which is brilliant. And Georgia took this completely single-handedly, and what a legend you are. So I keep going back to the fact that you just don't need me.
Well, I mean, if this becomes more regular, then, you know, maybe I don't. Maybe we'll be on Made by Mama's Career is advertising for a new host.
She's so mean. She keeps threatening this, guys.
Can you actually imagine if you just saw the job role go up one day, like parenting book?
Fucking hell. Guys, you're hearing it firsthand. This is the kind of shit that I have to put up with. No, George, you always do an amazing job, and I can't wait to listen to this interview. I know this guest, and she's been very, very public about her, you know, how tough, I guess, and her health diagnosis and how horrendous it's been for her for the last couple of years. But what an amazing advocate for this subject.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really interesting chat, actually. And like really rounded, like we talked about like fertility, we talked about her cancer diagnosis, we talked about, you know, her new perspective on life, how she leads her life now, things that have come from it, like so much. And it's not a really, really sad chat. So if you're thinking about switching off now, it's really not. It's a really informative chat, I would say.
Yeah, please stick around. We can't wait for you to hear it. Georgia, who are we talking to today?
We're chatting to Julia Bradbury. Julia, hello. How's your morning been?
Yeah, it's been good, thank you. Very good. I've done my, I have a little routine in the morning. I do breath work in the morning on my windowsill. I get the sunlight in my eyes and I start my day in a nice, calm manner, which is a reasonably new thing. That's something I've been doing for the last couple of years. And it really makes a difference.
Wow, that sounds so much more relaxed than my mornings usually are. When the Ocado man actually delivered the wrong shop and I was trying to do packed lunches and realised I had like baby food in there. And I was thinking, well, I wouldn't have ordered. You know, when you question yourself and you're like, I definitely wouldn't have ordered this. Why would I have ordered baby pouches? Like, my kids are 4 and 7. And it was mayhem. But that sounds really nice, really lovely.
So let's tell me, so you did sandwiches with baby stuff in it. So
I was attempting to make a packed lunch and then looked through all of the like stuff that had been delivered and I was like, this is not my shop. This is someone else's because this is definitely not what I would have ordered. But listen, Julia, you've got slightly older children than ours. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about your set up at home?
Yeah, so I live with my partner Gerard, and we have two little girls who are twins, not so little actually, just about to turn 9, probably 9 by the time this podcast goes out, but still ickle in our eyes. And my son Zeph is 12. So we've got a busy house, and the girls are 9 going on 19, and Zeph is still really sweet and very kind and lovely. And I've been told as soon as he hits teendom, the cuddles will stop, but it hasn't happened yet. So we're holding on in there.
Enjoying them right now. There's actually nothing worse. Like I've got he's nearly 8, 7-year-old son. And I remember walking to school and the first time he dropped my hand.
I know, sad times, heartbreak, completely.
But listen, tell us about, you know, take us right back to the start. You've spoken about having endometriosis and getting pregnant and how it's, you know, not always straightforward. And do you want to just give us a little bit of background into that, I guess?
So I'm what they call the delightful term a geriatric mum. And I'm hello to all the geriatric mums out there. I think
there
you've got to be
lots.
Over.
Yeah, it's over 35. It doesn't seem. Yeah. That old?
No, not geriatric.
No.
But I am a geriatric mum, and I had my firstborn Zeph when I was 40. And that's because he was the miracle baby. It was difficult to fall pregnant. I had a life of endometriosis, which I now know, having done lots of research into all things health related, is a sign of estrogen dominance. So I knew about my endometriosis. I had laparoscopy surgery in my 30s, remove the endometriosis from the lining of the womb. So that's sort of quite a big surgery. I don't know if you don't really know if it's successful, because endometriosis can continue. As people will know, it's a horrible disease, and not much is known about it. That still, I think, the average diagnosis for endometriosis is 7 or 8 years. So it's shocking. You can be really, for so many women, you can be dealing with GPs who just don't really understand it and don't diagnose this, as I said, for 7 or 8 years. So after my laparoscopy, it was several years before I got together with my partner, and I struggled to fall pregnant, and we both knew, because we were later in life and we'd known each other for many years as well, so we knew that we wanted children. We sort of didn't really know what to do next and all the rest of it. And I write about it in my book, Walk Yourself Happy. There was a time when I was filming a documentary in Iceland, and it was quite a hardcore trek. It was sort of like a 5-day hike and long, long days of trekking, 17, 18K a day, lots of volcanoes, lots of rough terrain, bad weather, icy rivers to cross. So it was a physical challenge. And I had a pregnancy kit with me, which my crew didn't know about. And I was hoping and praying, you know, fingers were crossed that I was pregnant this time. So I peed on a stick in probably one of the most unusual locations, which was in this sort of, you can only sort of describe them as these huts.
Yeah.
And they're dotted along these hiking trails. So it was a hut alongside a volcano. And it was a long drop. I don't know if people know what long drops are, but those are those toilets that you just, you know, it's just a hole. There's a wooden seat and then it's just a hole and everything just goes down into Mother Earth. So that's where I did my pregnancy test. And really sadly for us, it was negative and I wasn't pregnant. I was hoping with all my might that this was the one. And I sort of came out of that hut and I remember this horrible, crushing feeling in my chest. And of course I couldn't say anything to anyone and no phone reception. So I couldn't phone my partner and tell him at that stage. So I just had to get on. And actually what happened next was the next 3 days of the hike were very intense. And there were a lot of physical things to overcome. And I basically was my own therapist for those 3 days and used the walking and the outdoors and the experience to just get through the disappointment of not being pregnant. And actually, when we did finish the walk and it was beautiful, we filmed, we were on top of the famous volcano that stopped all the air traffic all those years ago.
I remember. Yeah.
Remember that?
I got stuck in Portugal. I was very happy with it.
Me too. I got stuck in Portugal. I got stuck in Spain. I wasn't so happy because I was trying to get back to film Countryfile and they were really not happy. So I remember it well. But the volcanic plumes, I remember that expression. We were on that volcano and we managed to get to the top of it, which was an incredible way to end this documentary. We were elated. And I remember saying to myself, you know what? If my body can make its way and power me through this, I am still hopeful that I will fall pregnant. It sort of gave me that feeling of positivity because I thought I've there's got to be something inside me. There's something that hopefully will one day allow me to be pregnant. And I did fall pregnant with my son, Zeph. So we called him our miracle baby. Oh. And then after he was born, about a year later, I was desperate. And maybe it's part of being the older mum and, you know, being older parents, but it was really important to me that he had siblings. And that was when we started down the IVF route, because I was pretty certain that I was not going to fall pregnant the natural way. And so I went through 3 or 4 rounds of IVF, which was grueling. And I was still filming. I was still working on Countryfile at the time. And I remember at one period during all of this, I just knew that I couldn't carry on working the way that I was working and hope to fall pregnant with IVF, because I was just under so much stress. You are under so much stress anyway. And you have to be monitored quite carefully. There are blood tests regularly. And I found myself in the remotest part, a really remote part of Scotland, and I needed to have a blood test and I couldn't get one. And I just went, this is not going to work. You know, if we really, really want to be serious about this. So I made the difficult decision. I had some other work lined up But I took time out and I just went, okay, I'm going to stop working and I'm going to concentrate on trying to fall pregnant. And I was lucky. I'm a freelancer. So the good thing about being a freelancer is you can do that. The bad thing, of course, is that you stop earning money.
Yeah.
So you have to, you know, but I've always been a freelancer. I've been a freelancer for my entire career and you get used to working that way. So you sort of put it in the lap of the gods and go, it'll be fine. Something else will come in. It'll be all right. I can take 2 months off and something will come right. And luckily for me, I fell pregnant with my two gorgeous little girls.
We're twins. And you mentioned that you use walking as almost therapy and you sort of did that yourself. You talked yourself into positive thinking. Did you ever have those moments of like, especially I guess when you were trying for the girls and with IVF, is this worth it? You know, like, you know, is this worth it? Did you ever have those feelings?
Well, I personally found myself in what I call the IVF tunnel. You become so focused on the outcome that I didn't have those thoughts because I didn't want to put that positivity. I didn't want to put that negativity into them. I wanted to stay happy. I wanted to stay upbeat. I wanted to see the whole experience as something that I was fortunate to be able to do, first of all.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make my womb a happy womb, a welcoming womb. That's what all the language surrounds that. So I really supported myself then with reflexology and with acupuncture. And I did everything that I could do. I ate really well. And I didn't have those thoughts until the last time when I think it was again, round number three or round number four. Can't remember, obviously this was the last time because we decided to go to Greece and to go there for 4 weeks and just for me to be still, not move, not stress, just go to somewhere that we're very familiar and comfortable with. My family is Greek, so we love Greece. And we went to the beautiful island of Spetses and I'd had my round of IVF and I'd said to my doctor, look, I'm just going to go and be still. We found a lab in Athens that could support me. And then I didn't fly. I could drive to Athens from Spetses because you can. So no flying, no stress. So the test that I had to do, the blood test and everything, the follow-up stuff that I had to do, I did it with a clinic in Athens. And I always remember this day. Went for the blood tests, and a few days later the results came in. And I was sitting outside in this beautiful garden in the house that we were staying at, and my partner was taking the call, and he was writing. I remember now he had the notes on his knees, and his feet were up because he was trying to get his knees and his lap flat so that he could write the notes. And then he was shaking his head, and then nodding his head and everything else. And then he just looked at me and he went,
"Oh."
And he gave me the thumbs up and it was, I mean, I cried. It was by no means, that was not the home straight, but what it meant is that the bloods had come back with positive numbers. And when the numbers are high, then it's a good, there's a good chance that you're pregnant. You then have to do a pregnancy test 6 weeks later after that. But the bloods are the indicators that they're looking for, they're biomarkers that they're searching for. And then he put the phone down. And it was funny because the clinic was Greek. So we had a friend who was translating. So it was all a bit strange. And then when we got to the bottom of it all, he said, what they've said is that the numbers are really high. So it could be multiples, which meant that it could be twins. And again, you still don't have any idea. And we were thrilled with that because, again, older parents, two for one, brilliant. You know, to get two in one go. It was like, yes, but... The caveat to that was, again, being an older mum, it meant that I was at much higher risk because you are at a higher risk once you're over the age of 40. If it's multiples, these things stack against you in terms of risk factors. So from that point of view, we were like, okay, let's really just take this nice and steady. And I just really took the best possible care of myself. And we got to the 6 week mark and we had the pregnancy test and... we had two little beating hearts.
Wow. What was it like for you and your partner during that time? You're super positive and it's absolutely incredible. But what was he like the same? Were people around you the same? Or do you think people kind of worried for you?
Well, people are worried for you and they give you quite a wide berth as well at times because the moods that you go through during IVF, the fluctuations are just phenomenal. It is a roller coaster. And of course, when you fail when the results aren't what you want, it's so disappointing. So you have to ride that out, and you have to go, right, okay, and get yourself ready to go again. And I definitely wanted, I wanted to try as many times as I physically was able to. But I also realized that we were running out of time. And to be honest, the time that we tried before Spetses, that was it. If this didn't work, we were done.
It. Yeah.
Because I just couldn't, I physically couldn't go through that anymore. And I think I put my body through a lot of stress, and you're tinkering with your hormones, and we don't know the long-term effects of what you do when you go through IVF, but you are, you know, desperate mums will do, you'll put yourself through everything for your children.
No, absolutely. I mean, like, neither Sarah or I have been through IVF, but we've spoken to a lot of people. And actually, before this podcast, I had no idea about how all-encompassing it is. And it's not just, you know, injecting and off you go. It's everything. It's your whole mind. You know, you can't think of anything else, I guess. And yeah, I mean, the stories are incredible. And yeah, I mean, like you say, what you put your body through is unbelievable.
I remember one of my jobs, mid one of my rounds of IVF, I was giving a talk at a conference, and I had to go into the loo. It was a hotel, I think it was somewhere like Birmingham, and I had to go into the loo and inject, going with my big long needle and grabbing my flesh from my belly. And that was just before I went on to give my talk. So you really have to be mentally all over it, because it's a tough process for everybody concerned.
Wow. I mean, I don't want to just keep going through all the different health battles that you faced in your life, but I guess there is something that you've spoken about a lot over the last couple of years, and it is something that we really want to talk about. And I guess that's your breast cancer diagnosis and how that was for you.
Well, I was very public about my breast cancer diagnosis because there were two reasons. First of all, I felt that I had to be. It's quite difficult to keep a secret like that. And I also didn't want to keep the secret for my children, for my family. And the other thing that I wanted to do was not as that when you're in the public eye, you get all sorts of stuff. Most of it is positive, some of it is not so positive and negative. You know, some people go, oh well, what's different about you? Just because you're a celebrity, loads of people have had breast cancer. You know, so what? It's like, you're not a special kind of thing. And I completely agree. I was not putting it out there to say, oh dear, look at me, poor me. I was doing it because I know that people really struggle mentally with any sort of cancer diagnosis. I've got a podcast out at the moment called Now What, which is a podcast that I've done with the NHS about how to handle all sorts of cancer diagnoses. And you struggle because it's probably up there with, you know, the worst things that you can hear in your lifetime. You're losing your house, you've lost your job, you've got cancer. Those are, you know, and your lover, partner, mum, dad, or child has died. They're the things that you don't want to hear in your lifetime, but you might well hear one of those things. Well, one in two of us will hear the words, you've got cancer in your lifetime, because that's the statistic. One in two people will face a cancer diagnosis in their lifetime. I made the documentary, Julia Bradbury, Breast Cancer and Me, to chart my journey and to show how I was impacted by it. And it's devastating. It makes you feel profoundly sad. It disrupts your whole family and your circle of friends and everybody that knows you. And of course, it's massively disruptive to your work, to your professional career, whatever it is you do, because you have to get through your treatment and your diagnosis, and then you have to get back to some form of work or not. Some people can't, you know, it's everything that you have known, everything that you are comfortable with is just blown out of the water. I also wanted to talk about some of the new science that's out there, some of the new screening tools that are out there for breast cancer, because I feel that is so important in today's world, where one in seven women is going to be diagnosed with breast cancer and one in two of us is going to have a cancer diagnosis. Cancer is on all of our, should be on the radar of all of us. You know, it's there. If it's not you, it's your partner.
Yeah.
And from the moment I got diagnosed with breast cancer, I went deep dive into a research about breast cancer, cancer causes, treatments, radical remission, cures, bizarre, straightforward, standard of care, not standard of care. I really wanted to see what was out there and know what I was dealing with. And I'm so pleased I did, because it absolutely changed my life. And again, in my book, I say cancer actually saved my life.
Yeah.
Because it made me completely overhaul my health. It made me look at how I was living, how I was eating, how I was sleeping, how I was communicating, how I was dealing with trauma and emotional baggage. And I just went, right, I need to start from scratch. Yeah. And I need to rebuild myself.
And I would absolutely love to hear about, you know, I've read a bit about, you know, how you changed your diet, and actually how people have said your kids are so unlucky because they can't eat cereal or whatever. But before that, I would love to find out about how you told your kids, and how did you hide any of the reality from them, or were you quite, you know, to the point?
First of all, I'd like to mention a brilliant charity called the Fruit Fly Collective, which is run by NHS nurses and medical professionals. And it is a charity, and it does a brilliant job of helping families discuss cancer with each other, and particularly explaining cancer to children. So you can go along to these workshops, and they do this funny little play, and they're really engaging, the ladies that run it. And they do a play that explains cancer. You know, there's a song, there's a bit of dressing up, there's all sorts of stuff. And then they have these tools around the room, which demonstrate how hard it is to get through chemo, for example. And what they'll do to demonstrate that is they'll have a pair of boxing gloves, and your children put the boxing gloves on, and then you have to try and tie your laces. And that's to demonstrate how you can lose numbness in your fingers, and how you can lose that ability. Your dexterity can go yeah. with chemotherapy. They will have like a tube of toothpaste on the side, and you pick up the toothpaste, and it's really heavy because it's full of lead. And that's to demonstrate how hard it is just to do the simple things after rounds and rounds of chemotherapy. Even brushing your teeth is exhausting, can be exhausting. So these are really clever devices, so that children can really understand, you know, when mummy or daddy say, oh, I'm really tired, I'm so sorry, I can't do that for you, darling, I can't do your shoelaces, or I can't make your breakfast, or whatever it might be. They get it.
That's how it feels.
And there was my son Zeph was taken by, there's a sort of a laser gun, and the laser gun demonstrated how radiation works by zapping an area, how radiotherapy works. So it's an absolutely brilliant asset for families, and they do an incredible job. And I'd like to do a big shout out for them and say thank you, because I took Zeph. I didn't take my girls. I took Zeph because he was a little bit older. And I think he really benefited from it. And how we decided to tell our children was to do it in the garden, because that's our happy place. We spend a lot of time outside, not surprisingly. I get my kids outside every day. Nature is massively important to me, and ergo to my whole family, because I make sure that they have to have a connection with nature every day. And that can be just as simple as being in the garden for 5 minutes and listening to the birds. But it's massively important for all of us, because that's how we've evolved. So we took them into the garden, and we held their hands, and we took them for a little walk, a little stroll, and just said those words. We've got something difficult to tell you, but we want to tell you, and we want to be honest with you. And mummy has this disease called cancer. And we then went through explaining what it was, and the questions came. You know, my son had heard about chemotherapy. So are you going to have that treatment, mummy, which is all your hair going to fall out? And I actually didn't have to have chemotherapy because of the type of cancer I had. And we were pretty certain of that at this stage, because that had been the prognosis. We said, no, I wasn't going to lose my hair, but I was going to have this operation where they were going to remove the cancer from my body. And it was a big operation, because I was going to have something called a mastectomy. It basically means they were going to remove my breast. They were going to take my breast off with the cancer, and then the cancer would be gone, and they would have to do some other checks to see that it wasn't anywhere else in my body. And I would be going away for a little bit while this happened. And my little girl said to me, mummy, can I still hug you after you've had your operation? Oh. And I said, yes. I said, yes, of course you can still hug me, my love. I'll need your hugs more than ever. And then that was it. Then we told them, and then it was there. And then whenever they had a question in the house, then we would just answer it. Mm-hmm. And I personally felt that honesty was the best policy for my children and in my family setup. There is no right or wrong.
We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
Did you talk to families that decide to keep it from their kids, or have you not come across
actually
that?
No, yeah. I have, because everybody at the Fruit Fly Collective that I met, they were there,
yeah,
for
they're
that
there
reason
to do it, yeah,
so they were being very open as well. But we talked about how hard it was. There was a mum I remember, and she was going through it was tough. She had a brain cancer, and she was going through really tough treatment. She'd lost her hair, and she and her husband had a business together, and she'd had to step out of that business and left him to it. So it was really eye-opening and very, very sad as well. But people really are resilient and get on, and they try to do their best by their children.
Yeah. You just touched on how, you know, that diagnosis saved your life and changed your life. Do you want to just talk us through that? Like, how, I mean, I don't know how it wouldn't, you know, of course it's going to change your life. There are moments in your life that do, you know, completely change your perspective. And I can imagine that diagnosis is absolutely one of them. What, you know, what have you done to change your life since? And how do you think it's changed the way you parent?
So I've learned, I learned a lot about the different treatments for cancer, the drugs that are available, nutrition, and different approaches around the world to cancer. So one thing I will say, and this is always a really controversial topic. First of all, this is not a blame game. Mm. This is how I dealt with my diagnosis, and this is what I have learned. I'm not blaming myself, but there were certain things that I'll go through that certainly could have contributed to my breast cancer. We touched on it earlier when we spoke about my endometriosis and that being a sign that you are estrogen dominant. I've subsequently had further DNA testing done, and it has revealed some interesting things. I've had another test called the Dutch test done as well. I work with a lab called Regenerus here in the UK, and they don't normally do patient-facing testing, but we're working together to try and get these tests more widely available and out there and more discussed as well. So the Dutch test is a test from America. It's a hormone test, and it's a very, very reliable test of your hormones because they test your urine. And by testing your urine, they can give you a really precise measure of your hormones. So estrogen, progesterone, cortisol, etc. And overall, I did another test with a company called the DNA Company in America, or in Toronto rather. And overall, these are the things I learned about myself and why they were pertinent to how I live my life now. So for me, detoxing is a really important thing, and leading a clean, healthy lifestyle is really important, because I want to do the best job I can of detoxing, and I don't want my body to be full of other toxins as well. I really want to be able to detox everything that I need to do. So that is one of the reasons why I lead this clean, healthy lifestyle that I do now.
Yeah. And you touched on diet, and, you know, yes, and I've read about, you know, your kids, you know, you don't let them have cereal and that kind of stuff. Talk to us a little bit about that, and also the kind of comments that you're getting, because I've read that, and I found that so strange that you would out anyone for being too healthy.
Yeah, well, but that's what happens, isn't it? It's a bit like not drinking. People go, go on.
Yeah.
And I don't drink anymore. So it's strange, isn't it? The healthier you are, the more people have a go at you. So let's put this in context. I do let my children have one type of cereal, an organic type of cereal, once a week, and they know that that's a treat. They don't have any extra sugar on it. They don't have any extra honey on it or anything else, but they like this particular cereal that might be wheat-based. But as a rule, big news to people out there, really sorry to tell you, cereal's not healthy. Cereals are full of sugars. They're full of things called acrylamides, which are carcinogens, because they're a processed food, and they're processed at a very high heat, and that high heat creates something called acrylamides, and those acrylamides are known carcinogens. So cereal is not a health food. It is convenient and it is tasty, and I know it's really, really hard with kids to come up with alternatives, but it is possible.
Yeah.
So my kids have a variety of things throughout the week for breakfast. Eggs once a week, so they'll have omelette or dippy eggs or whatever it is. They'll have avocado and some tomatoes, so they'll basically have a fry up. But without the fry up, they have the avocado bit. They can have it on some sourdough toast or some seedy crackers, and they can have they like that with cucumbers and tomatoes and all the rest, and even a drizzle of olive oil. They like it. They get used to it. Let me tell you, there's nothing wrong with having a savory breakfast. I make my own cereal, and we do it with a variety of different things. I use millet flakes. I stir some hemp seeds into the millet flakes, some pumpkin seeds into the millet flakes, and some desiccated coconut into them. And I mix them together with a plant-based milk. We use coconut milk, cashew, whatever your choice. It turns into a porridge-like cereal. Cereal,
yeah.
And they went from really not liking it. And I add taste with cinnamon powder, and vanilla essence. And they love it.
Wow. And do you talk to your kids about, you know, about this and the importance of eating well? Because I mean, I try to do that. I mean, I'm not, I guess, probably as strict as you are. I'm like mindful of what my kids eat. And my husband used to be like a professional athlete, so he's always eaten well and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of ingrained in us. And I was driving my son back from cross country with some of his friends, and the girls were in the back, and he was eating his lunch in the front, like on the way back. And he had like a salad. I can't remember what it was. It was some kind of salad with avocado and whatever. And they were going, Axel, why do you eat so healthy? And they were laughing. And I thought, I didn't even really think about it. Like, I didn't know you were being picked on. And then he went, well, you wouldn't put milk in a Ferrari.
There you go.
And I thought, how did you know that? I don't know.
And where did he get that line from? I mean, I don't want people to think my kids, they do eat sweets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
They're allowed, we have pizza, but I just don't give, they have pizza once a week, and I try and get the best pizza I can. I try and get a sourdough one, and I don't try and, you know, skip the processed meats and all of that. They have a margarita or a vegetarian. They do. I can't stop them. And of course, when they go to school,
I was going to say, what about school? Like, what, how, you know, how do you feel about it? Do you just have to let it go?
I let it go, and I give them the best food that I can at home, and I'm educating them in the best way that I can, so that when they're older, and I always give them the reason. I always tell them why I'm asking, please eat your broccoli and please eat your red cabbage. And I'm asking you to do that because you need to eat colourful food, because it's really good for your gut bacteria and it's good for your immune system. So please eat colourful food. And they go, I don't want to finish it. I go, finish it. I want you to finish it. And we have this discussion, and they know. Do they sneak off and eat sweets in the bedroom? Yes, they do. You know, are they perfect? Are they like these little robots that just go around repeating what I say? No, but they absolutely know the reasoning behind everything.
Yeah.
And they understand. So one of my girls is a really keen sportswoman. She runs, she plays football. She gets up at 6 o'clock on one of her mornings to go running, then she does football, then she does another camp, then she does more running. She's going from 6 till 7 p.m. and it's all sport. So on those days, we feed her more protein, we make sure that she has a really good start, and we make sure that what she's snacking on, and we actually give her a protein shake as well. I don't think protein shakes are brilliant, but on a day like that for her, we give her a really healthy with some coconut water and some coconut milk in there, because she needs the fuel for the day. And they know why. They know why we're doing it. And your husband, if he's a former athlete, he will know as well. And you can only do your best and live by example.
Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? Because I find it and Zoe, we talk about it a lot. We find it difficult. Zoe had an eating disorder and she, you know, kind of, I guess, looks back and thinks about how her childhood and was that about restriction and the way she looked or what was it about? And I guess there's all these messages coming at you and you don't want to bring your kids up to be obsessive and, you know, become completely obsessed. But equally, like you just say, you can't sit back and think, oh, whatever, just find your own way and eat what you want. Because you can't. Like we know you can't just eat what you want and be okay. Like maybe for so long, but not forever. I just find it difficult. Anyway, listen, we haven't got that long, but we are so interested to hear about the retreats you're doing. So do you want to just tell us a little bit about that before you go?
Yeah, so we had such an amazing response, such a warm response on the book tour with Walk Yourself Happy. People were queuing for hours, not just to get the book signed. They wanted to then talk about the content of the book. So in the book, just really quickly, I write about sleep, and I spoke to wonderful circadian rhythm expert. He works out of Oxford. He's got an incredible sleep lab. He's called Professor Russell Foster. And he talks about why sleep is such a foundation for all of our health. And it was something that I really had to focus on because I didn't. I'm a night owl. I didn't get enough sleep. I went to bed too late. My job took me, you know, time zones as well. So I was really abusive with myself when it came to sleep. So I've really relearned some behaviors when it comes to sleep. Breathing. We all tend, including me, to breathe too fast and to breathe through our mouths.
Oh my God, again, don't. My husband's bought me this flipping mouth tape for the night time.
Yes, the tape.
Oh my God, yes.
So on the retreats, Patrick McEwen, international breathwork expert, works with athletes and megastars all around the world. He's going to be there. We are also going to have the expert nutritionist Pauline Cox, who's written the brilliant book Hungry Women. She's an expert on eating for hormones and how you can eat to regulate your body, and you really can. And she's designing the menu on the retreats, and we will eat that type of food together. So it will be the experience of us all doing what I was telling you about, Georgia, you know, eat like this and learn what are the things you can swap in and swap out. And if you don't have cereal, what can you have? If you don't have pasta, what can you have? Why should you, you know, sort of try and avoid starchy carbs late at night? Why should you try and stop eating 3 hours before you go to bed? What does this do for you? Hannah Beadle is brilliant at how to improve our movement in the outdoor environment. So of course we're going to be walking together. We're going to be walking ourselves happy. I'm going to be walking with you. We're going to be forest bathing. We're going to be doing a bit of my Qigong shaking out in the walk. We're going to be doing all of that. But Hannah is going to show us how to move our body in the 21st century in a way that we have forgotten to do. Because we don't lift our arms up. We don't hang anymore. We don't balance. We don't use our body the way we don't squat. Mm. We don't do all the stuff that we've evolved to do. We sit at screens and we sit on the sofa. We sit at a desk. And it's important to know how to move and how to move outside. So Hannah's going to be there teaching us that. Incredible. So the retreats are going to be a completely immersive, lovely experience, replicating many of the things that I've learned in Walk Yourself Happy. Retreats, as you know, retreats are generally quite expensive. They're expensive to put on because you've got hotels and we're staying in beautiful locations, in very lovely locations where you can walk and you know, go on gorgeous country walks, and they are lovely and they are comfortable and we've got all of these people. So we know that not everybody is going to be able to access these retreats, but the information is in the Walk Yourself Happy book. And if you do want this treat and you do want to really learn and be able to reset from there, then come along and treat yourself in the true sense of the word. And we will also be working over the next 12 months to create Walk Yourself Happy events across the country in accessible ways as well. Just the movement, just to get people involved in nature snacking, walking together, and using walking as a therapy and as a tool.
Love that. And where can people go to book those retreats?
So head over to www.theoutdoorguide.co.uk. So The Outdoor Guide, you'll find it when you search that, is the website that my sister Gina and I founded 10 years ago. And originally it started because people just said, I want to do your TV walks. How do I do that? Or what boots were you wearing? Or where did you stay? Or what was that youth hostel and all the rest of it? So we put all of that information on the outdoor guide.
I love that. Thank you so much.
I'm really great to be on your podcast. Thank you so much. And love to Zoe. Sorry I couldn't meet both of you.
I know. Next time.
Well done, you, and well done, Julia. What a wonderful conversation that was.
I know. Do you know what? Yeah, big, big thanks to Julia for coming on and just kind of laying out all the information. I actually learned loads from that chat.
I was going to ask you what your best bits were.
What were my best bits? I don't know. I think that's hard to say because there is a lot of information and we chatted about a lot of different subjects, I guess. But I think something to come out of it is, you know, her new, I guess, the way she lives her life now after her cancer diagnosis. And not that there's ever a positive, but I guess sometimes when things like that happen in your life, it makes you reassess and, you know, really decide how you're going to go forward. I really enjoyed that. And I definitely would take away things like, you know, we're not on this podcast. This podcast is not about judgment, so please do not feel like we're judging you if you feed your kids cereal or whatever in the morning. It is, you know, let's just talk about that because 99% of people do, absolutely 1,000,000%. But I do find it interesting when you hear people who live in this, I guess, more like extreme way. I do think about like small little shifts that I could make, like especially with the kids. Like for instance, I don't know, she said she only gives her kids sourdough bread because it's like the minimal ingredients. Well, that's quite an easy swap. Like if you're going to make a swap, that if that's a small thing, or she only lets them have certain, you know, pizza once a week, like just small things like that. I think, oh yeah, actually those small things, I don't think I could go all out like she does, but I found that really interesting.
Yeah, and me, and also if it makes you kind of reevaluate or reassess without holding the judgment, like I sometimes think when people kind of potentially can talk about the way that they're feeding their children, it comes across as like, well, I'm doing it this way, therefore you should be doing it too. And that's not what I took from this conversation and not what I took from Julia. Whereas actually, you know, we do have some, I never really talk about kind of the kids and nutrition and stuff, but we do have some quite hard and fast rules around, you know, sweets in the week, for example. Like I just don't give them any sugar. We try to minimize all of that during the week. Like obviously sometimes it doesn't work out, but you know, it's not a dessert every single day. It's like they can have natural yogurt and fruit, or they can have a sucky, or they can have, you know, whatever it looks like, but it's whatever works for you. And I think sometimes if you're feeling out of control with it, or you feel like you need to be changing it slightly, having conversations like this can really help.
Yeah, just about small like little tweaks you can make. And like slight, like it's not got to be all or nothing, for sure. That's what I take away from this chat.
Well, thank you so much to Julia, and well done, Solo Georgia. Loving your work, but that's it. You're not doing that again. As always, we would love you to rate, review, subscribe, and please give our podcast a little follow.
Yeah, and any feedback on this episode, guests you'd like to hear from, or like topics you'd like us to do on the Friday Q&As, drop us a DM on Instagram. We're on @MadeByMamas, and we'll be back on Friday. Made by Mummers is an Insanity Studios production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.